estate services, Lavazzi and Boob1.co.uk present the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast, episode 490. I'm Adam and it's Mauve. And for the benefit of Kirby Bartlett Sloan, are you my mummy? And here's Kirby Bartlett Sloan
again.
Everybody lives! Everybody lives! And are you my mummy?
Oh, jeez. And Debbie Melrose.
You took two slices. No blondes, no flags. Anything else before you leave?
Robert Haynes.
You forgot something.
Did I?
Are you my mummy?
Robert Haynes.
Are you my mummy?
No. And Mary Lang.
Don't you ever get tired of Doctor Who?
Oh, well done, Mary.
Yes.
Yes, we do.
No. Are you my mummy?
Yes, I'm your mummy.
Mummy.
Hooray! I knew it.
Mummy. All right, then. This week it's Empty Tower, Child Doctor Dances. Lillian Robbins says About Time. Yes, that's what the show is basically about, Lillian. Surprised it's taken too long to work that one out. Pardon?
I said we can always count on Lillian.
Indeed. So we might as well get straight on, as it's a two-part. Everybody all right? How's your dicky ticker, Deb?
All right.
Pardon?
All right, same all right. Old.
What? Ben's not on this week because there's football on.
Still off for another month, and no, nothing's really moving. I think I don't know why, but it all seems to be very related to the lockdown. How my doctor wants to start doing this. So whilst we're still technically in lockdown, nothing's going on. There you go.
Sorry, when you mentioned Ben, it reminded me that the reason why he's not here is because the football's on, Manchester United.
Football's on.
And they're also playing 5 p.m. next week, so if the match goes into extra time, he's unlikely to be on next week either. And
he usually will just be watching it and ignoring us.
No,
but anyway.
That's any game. And when it's Manchester United, he'll be wanting to watch the game, so that's why he's not here. Talking of COVID,
so people run around, they kick balls around, and someone
learned.
Wins. There.
After 490 episodes,
to
wait
to
for Kirby to talk before I say my next sentence. Talking of COVID, I have my vaccine on Wednesday, so hopefully by Sunday I would have the little gadget they inject into you, apparently. Is it the Russians that inject a gadget into you so as they can monitor where you are? We'll be up and running, and I'll be going beep, 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 while doing the podcast. And everybody will know who and where
5G.
I am.
You got to watch out for the 5Gs.
I'll have my own KGB file. Because, of course, nobody can trace anybody these days, can they? Because nobody's got smartphones. Just say.
No.
Right then. Yes? What?
Nope. Nobody does.
No.
I used to not have when I started this podcast.
Anyway, where are we up to? Brandon Moore says, looking suave. Yes, I am. That's even without the filter. And Robert Haynes. Robert!
What?
I'm not going to say what Rob said.
Well, at least you're not looking mauve.
And then Brandon said about space. Right then, so the empty child begins with
he ignored me.
The doctor being quite excited
within the
TARDIS while they're chasing a weird space object eventually through the time vortex because it's sort of jumping around in time. And they follow it to Landon in the war. And
almost
as soon as they arrive, it gets a
bit spooky. Don't talk about the war.
Yeah, don't mention the war. I mentioned it once.
I don't think they noticed.
No. Even as they arrive, it gets a bit spooky because you feel like they're being watched. But, of course, what's the name again? Rose is channeling Jerry Halliwell with her Union Jack T-shirt. I'm sure you can get a figure of that, you know. So then we see some views from elsewhere of them through a Vaseline lens, which is essentially being watched by the entity. I'm going to call it an entity because it's not just the child, it's some sort of weird entity that's watching them as well as them, because there's other things going on like telekineticness and stuff like that. Anyway, the Doctor, meanwhile, ends up in this...
Kinesis?
Well, hang on, let me finish a sentence. Ends up in a sleepeasy. Right then, what?
Oh. Telekinesis.
Kinesis.
Yes.
Telekinesis.
That's what I said.
Yeah. You said telekinetic.
I'll be quiet, you. Anyway, the Doctor ends up, shut up, in a telekinesis, in a sleepeasy where there's a singer, while Rose goes, because she hears that this...
Master.
Jesus Christ. What?
It's not, this isn't a time where you're trying to hide drinking.
Right.
It's not
shut
sleepeasy,
up.
It's just
gives me
bar.
The element of a sleepeasy, and if I say it's a sleepeasy, whether it's nothing to do with... I mean,
it's a speakeasy, not a sleepeasy.
Oh, right, that's it. Where's me bloody... Hang on.
Lordy, can't you get any of this right?
It's the nightclub.
Don't care. It's going to be a case of...
Have you never watched Bugsy Malone?
That's what I got. That's what I got in there.
Oh, I have to get that. I keep forgetting to get that.
Did they Did they have speakeasies in Britain?
No.
No. I got...
We didn't have prohibition.
I might have to just sit back and watch the football at this rate. Anyway, where were we? Yeah, anyway, so there's this, I'm calling it a speakeasy, blah, 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 club, because it looks like one. The Doctor gets up on stage and asks if they've seen anything weird, like falling to the ground and blowing up and stuff. They didn't really
answer him. He asked if anything fell out of the sky.
Essentially.
Ba-dum-ching.
Which is sort of what I said, to be fair.
You said blowing up.
Shut up.
By the way, this one didn't blow up. Like,
An air raid siren goes off while Rose is climbing up a rope because she's trying to get to this child. Oh, Jesus.
Boy.
Yes, it's a child. But yes, I think children can be boys. Last time I checked.
Master.
Yeah.
This is there's a historical inaccuracy.
There weren't any police boxes in London during the war, I suppose.
No. Barrage balloons were never tethered with ropes.
Okay.
Because ropes can be severed easily. They were always tethered with cables or chains.
Cables, yeah.
Kirby, are you going to be picking up on every discrepancy in this?
Does it really matter?
Yeah.
It's a science fiction fantasy TV show that takes us back to the war.
Longer hanging on to a rope. I mean,
it'll be difficult for me to pick up on everything because I could not watch it this week with commentary.
Oh,
because
no.
my DVD failed. So I had to watch it on HBO Max.
Kirby's trying his hardest to bore us, trying to make a cup of tea. You know he's going to ignore us. Maybe you will go for a wee. Thankfully, I went before we started the show.
So I'll only pick up on the pedantic things that I can remember easily.
Anyway,
we're not going to get through this before 9 o'clock,
anyway,
are we?
Rose gets carted away on a barrage balloon during an air raid, which was very entertaining. She didn't get shot or anything because they wouldn't have noticed her in that T-shirt. Meanwhile, the Doctor finds a cat on top of something or other and gives it a little bit of attention. And I said to Deb that cat's dead now.
How charming of you.
Thank you. Anyway, the phone of the TARDIS rings, and I thought the bells are St. John's. Of course, but there's no St. John's logo on the TARDIS at this stage, so that was irrelevant. Anyway, a girl suddenly randomly appears and said, "Don't answer it." Of course, he's going to answer it. Are you my mummy?
And?
Mummy.
Something like that, yeah.
And, Master, this... I don't know why Neil Gaiman was not watching, was not paying attention, because this obviously shows that the darn pull to open means pull that little door.
Yeah. Right, okay. Right.
Someone's watching Rose with a very, very World War II binoculars.
Well, that's because she's from the future.
Neil
James says, "Give me some Spock." Tim Drury. Oh, I got a special tune for Tim.
Tim Drury's
mention. He says, "Patriotic Rose, but are you my mummy, Adam?" If I were, I'd be rather
Are
worried.
You?
And Terry Miles has got the kettle on. Right then. So, yeah, so the Doctor then starts looking around for this mysterious girl, while Ev from EastEnders, and, of course, Mary will know who I'm talking about when I talk about Ev from EastEnders. I was actually offered to her for a fantasy con last year. To be fair. She sort of pushes her husband, who's moaning about the fact he's just got the dinner on the table, into the shed. It's supposed to be an air raid shelter, but it doesn't really look like one. So I remember air raid shelters from when I was a child. I used to see air raid shelters in gardens, even 30 years after the war. And it didn't look like that. Oh, here we go. Now you're trying to refute my memories of a child, are you?
Excellent series from the BBC about building this particular style air raid shelter. That is quite authentic.
I bet that was absolutely riveting, Kirby. Ooh. Right then. So, because they're in the air raid shelter, is it Nancy? I can't remember her name now. Takes the opportunity to nick all the food. But Rose is still dangling from a high height of this barrage balloon and gets spotted by some lech. I mean, sorry, a bloke in uniform who's just been eyeing up some bloke's bottom. Then he eyes up Rose's bottom and decides because he likes her bottom, he's going to try and rescue her. I'm surprised her fingers haven't sort of worn out by this stage, but eventually they do, and she goes, not after Nancy hasn't sort of set up a dinner for a load of waifs and strays. A very nice looking dinner. I tell you what, that big meat joint, I think it was probably a bit too much for the bloke and woman who went into the air raid shelter.
They explained why he has so much food.
Here we go. Because he was having doodah with the butcher. Yes, I heard about that.
Rose
falls and gets saved by one of Captain Jack's special gadgets, which we don't see ever again, but it's still, well, apart from in this story. And of course, as soon as she lands, she quite likes him.
Hold on. You know that scene when she's up in the air, she's saying, "Who's got me?" or whatever, or "Who's got you?" That just reminded me of the Superman movie when he rescues what's his name? Michael Keaton.
Yes, yeah.
That is an Anderson air raid shelter. It's perfectly authentic.
Oh, marvelous.
God.
We know what they are.
We're going to move away from the 20 megabyte air raid shelter podcast back to Doctor Who.
And I used to play in it.
Where are we going? Oh, yeah. So,
and you agree that that's authentic.
Brandon Moore says Moffat's gay agenda. I think it was more of RTD's gay agenda, which Moffat was jumping on the bandwagon of, shall we say. So. And my daughter would argue this is more of a Moffat's bi agenda. She likes the phrase bi vibes, which is what you're getting from Captain Jack on this particular instance. And he was never not that way, which is quite nice to see actually in this particular story that, you know, he is very sort of swings one way or the other depending on who he likes and who he dislikes, and this goes on all the way through. His time.
Was he swinging, was he?
Yeah, swinging between whatever
person. Didn't know you noticed.
He happens to fan. Oh, very funny. So anyway, then there's a dinner around the table, and there's a little hint because Nancy's being mummy around the table to all the children.
That's lovely what she does. That is so nice.
And does it very, very well. And then
can
the
I
doctor.
Ask everybody something, though?
No, you can't.
No.
Yes.
All right.
Watch a bit of the football while you're doing that.
Yes, you can.
No, it's about, obviously, for me, it's just so obvious that the kid is the guy, Nancy is the guy's mother, you know, the kid's mother.
Was that even at first watch?
I know, it's so bloody obvious.
It wasn't obvious to me.
It wasn't obvious to me the first time I saw it. Thank you. Kirby.
I must admit, I did guess it first time I watched it, but it took Isla almost the whole double parter to work it out.
Same here, but Kirby,
Master.
Brace yourself, you might want to sit down. Are you ready? You ready? Are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you ready?
For what?
Have you sat down? Have you made sure there's nothing?
Yes,
right.
Sat down.
Ready?
Okay. What was that for?
For being right about something. Anyway, right then, back to Doctor Who. So there's a dinner around the table. The Doctor turns up, I don't know how he got in. Anyway, he did. And he just appears. Nobody noticed him. Just sort of like he materialized.
I like that.
They'd be on the lookout for an adult. Yeah. And do what they're doing.
And he's very good with the kids. It's quite amusing, actually. Neil James says, I joined the Nicholas Norks Facebook group today. I like to be supportive. And those Norks need a lot of support. Thank you for that, Neil. Lowering the tone in the appropriate fashion.
Hey, Master.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
No, completely on a different subject. But see, that was Nicholas Norks was mentioned 9 years ago when we were just discussing this. Mm. But you guys, you and Ben also discussed a movie that Deborah Watling was in with Ringo Starr.
Yes, that'll be called
Stardust.
That'll be the day was the movie.
That'll be the day.
Made on the Isle of Wight.
I acquired a copy of it and discovered that it was filmed on the Isle of Wight.
I just bloody said that. And I also said at the time it was filmed. I had scenes at various holiday camps and at Shanklin Theatre.
Apparently you can also see Deborah's Norks.
You do see Deborah's Norks, but the full point is that when we used to do the show. And I was parked in Shanklin recording it with you. That's because Alicia at the time was actually at Shanklin Theatre. And the link is Shanklin Theatre appears, the internal part of it, appears in the film. Can I get on with the show?
No. Please.
Robert Vance Jr. says, very Oliver Twist. I'm talking about my attire, my digital attire.
As I haven't seen it yet.
No, he's talking about the scene with the kids.
No, I'm talking about my... Is he? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's talking about the scene with the kids.
Sorry.
Robert. Thank you, miss. Thank
it's you. Not all about you.
It usually is. Anyway, so there's something funny goes on. This right. The doctor asks if they've seen anything that looks like this, and this ridiculously bad scribble that nobody would recognise.
We know that.
I know.
Then there's
looks like a bomb.
Then some stuff goes on. Oh, yeah, the little boy arrives and starts saying, are you my mummy? And the doctor, Nancy says, don't touch him, otherwise you'll be like him. And, anyway, the doctor's a bit curious. And
More than a bit curious. That's why he followed her in the first place.
And he's quite sympathetic. And she says, don't let him in. So he lets him in. Meanwhile, Rose is on full tilt flirt mode with Captain Jack.
Oh, my God. That was embarrassing. That was
a bit old for her, but hey,
indeed.
What? Kirby.
It's a little bit old for her, yeah.
Kirby.
Plus, she goes for anybody who's in the bloody episodes.
Robert.
With Jamie activating all sorts of things in the house, including that little monkey that claps the cymbals.
Oh, that's
I like
creepy,
that little
that
monkey
bit,
that claps the signal.
Well, that is a direct reference to Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
I know. I love that film.
Do you know, I once went to work wearing a fez.
How did Isla respond to the little, are you my mummy kid?
Originally, at the beginning, she was rather clingy.
Aww.
But she worked out very quickly, especially when they get to the hospital, that it's some kind of virus or something that is going on, you know. And she was more fascinated with the whole idea of it being an illness. So, yeah, she sort of went... Her natural curiosity about things like that sort of outweighed the fear, but she was genuinely very frightened at the beginning.
That's interesting because the hospital scenes are even scarier.
Yeah, no, this is what I said. I was expecting. I was ready. I was ready for cuddles.
They reminded me of
the hospital scenes. Reminded me of Stranger Things. Fascinated, just leaning forward, looking fascinated.
I've got two things to try and remember now. What? Hospital scenes reminded me of a mixture between Resident Evil 2 and
Silent Hill
Stranger
Silent
Things
Hill.
And the little clapping the monkey thing with the symbols. Funny. When I once went fancy dress to work once, one of my mates took Mickey out of me all day, and every time he saw me, he went because I was wearing the fez.
Hey, Master,
oh,
9 years, 9 years ago, Alicia was refusing to watch this again.
Yes, and she probably...
You think she ever
I think she has watched it. I think she watched it with Carl.
We've only just got Isla to watch the Vashta Narada episodes after traumatizing her about 5 years ago.
Robert Vance Jr. says, no one here but us chickens. Well, this one chicken. Right, back to Doctor Who. That's what I'm trying to skip through this, isn't it? So, yeah, lots of flirting between Captain Jack and Rose. Then Captain Jack shows Rose because she burns her hands on the rope before she falls and uses the nanogenes to fix her hand, which is a bit of a hint as to what's going on.
Yeah, so you know what you could call these? You call these Chekhov's nanogenes.
Anyway, back to Doctor Who. Anyway, so Rose and Captain Jack climb on top of his invisible spaceship.
Well, he's trying to do this deal with her, and she's just busy flirting.
Yeah. She doesn't like it being invisible, so he switches the visibility on. And then the Doctor finds Nancy and has a bit of a conversation with her while Captain Jack and Rose dance in front of the clock of the Houses of Parliament.
Very Peter Pan.
Yeah.
You know why it's called, where they got the name Chula?
No.
The RTD and all of his main writers for the first series used to gather for planning sessions at an Indian restaurant called Chula.
Oh, cool. That's a cool thing. I like that very much.
In fact, there's extras on the DVD set of some of those sessions where they point the camera at everyone and say, "Oh, hi, I'm Bad Teeth Guy."
Anyway, back to Doctor Who. Doctor and Nancy find the Albion Hospital, which looks suspiciously like the same hospital that the Silence were in a few years later, or it gave me that
sort of is.
It's the same hospital that the pig was in.
The pig, yeah.
Was it? Okay. But obviously 50 years earlier in history.
Yes.
Yes. So that means...
It never was in history because this is a science fiction fantasy TV program.
Anyway, the Doctor uses his sonic screwdriver to break through the padlock. Probably should have locked it back up again afterwards, but nevertheless. Goes into the wards and finds Victor Meldrew. I don't believe it! That's not actually Victor Melrose, it's just the actor that plays...
Victor Melrose?
Meldrew.
Richard Wilson.
Did you say Melrose? Meldrew.
Yeah, it's the guy from Merlin.
No, he doesn't look like the guy from Merlin here. He looks like Victor Meldrew.
Richard Wilson.
He tells...
I don't know who that is, but it's the guy from Merlin.
Yeah,
I was watching Father Ted the other night. He's in one of them.
He allows the Doctor to find a bit of information about all the people in the ward who are currently sort of unconscious with face masks fused to their faces. And they've all got little scars on their hands, and so has Victor Meldrew. I mean, Dr. Constantine. And after a long period of time of conversation...
Oh, it's some sort of sitcom, One Foot in the Grave. I was wondering, what the heck?
Yeah, but we already knew that. There was no need to go in.
No, you knew that.
Yeah, we knew that. As in, we knew it.
Did Mary know that?
Well, there's no point in telling us because we already know. Anyway, face mask erupts from his mouth and...
Wasn't that good, though?
It was good, but unfortunately they took out all the lovely cracking bone sounds which originally accompanied it. And then...
Theoretically, they never broadcast that.
No, they didn't, but I have seen a version of it with them in. I can't think where, but I have seen it. Anyway, while the Doctor legs it from the room where all this is going on, he bumps into Jack and Rose, and there's an immediate rapport, slightly irritated, but a rapport between Jack and the Doctor while they show off their various, abilities, shall we say. And... then I think there's a point in which the point where Jack and Vitsy that he's sort of set up a bit of a con. He's a con man, as he says. Yeah. And he's a bit of a time cop, not a time cop. What do they call him?
Time agent.
He's not a time agent though. He's trying to escape from the time.
Yeah, he's nicked.
Well, he was a time agent once.
Yes, but he's now a con man.
And you know, Master. You know, all this 51st century time agent business is deliberate. It's a reference to Talons of Wing Chiang.
Thank you for that, Kirby. Right then, anyway, so meanwhile, they start getting a bit cornered by all the patients that wake up. And so does Nancy gets cornered by the little child, the little boy. And she goes, "Leave me alone, leave me alone." Of course, in hindsight, you would say, "Let him touch you," and then... or just say, I'm your mummy, let him touch you, and then that, we don't have to have episode two. Never mind.
That's right.
Yeah, that's true. Had she given in then?
Right.
But then they'd be one episode short.
You know something? It's too bad she never became a companion, because if she'd become a companion, she would have brought her son along, and then we would have had another Jamie in the TARDIS.
Yep. Her admitting to being his mother later was accompanied, remember, with those nanotech things that healed him.
Yeah. Yeah.
So she admitted it now and hugged him, she would just become like him.
Yeah, but I suppose the doctor had to encourage her to admit that she was the mother, otherwise the nanogenes wouldn't have put one and one together and made, mother, daughter, let's put everything right. Anyway, back to Doctor Who. The doctor tells them all, Go to your room. And they did, which saved everybody's life for a minute. And he said, I'm glad that worked, which is quite good.
Yes.
So Nancy sort of escapes the house, because there's a really good scene, actually, where the little boy has gone, but then another little boy turns up with a face mask, that one of her little sidkicks, and... scares
no.
in daylight. Oh, what bloody now? What?
No, that's not one of her sidekicks.
I know it's the kid.
The son
the kid
of the house homeowner.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, sorry, I got that bit wrong. God.
He's been in the Anderson shelter all along.
Okay. Well, sorry, I got that bit wrong. Anyway, so she then gets caught by Hev and the dad, who's really, really hacked off. He ain't got any dinner to eat now. And then they sort of just house arrest her, really, and sort of tell her off, while the doctor, Jack and Rose find a little room where the kid was actually penned up for a while before he smashed it up. And of course the doctor said, go to your room, and of course that's the kid's room, so they're now in a bit of trouble.
Oh, that is so creepy. Yeah. That's creepy.
Yeah, when he says this is his room, you know. Yeah.
I have a problem with type. That.
Yeah, oh my God, he's got a problem with it.
They established that there's not much of Jamie left, that basically he just goes, are you my mummy, and stuff like that, and yet there's all these drawings and stuff as if there was more to him.
Right, okay.
More to the nanogenes.
Okay, science fiction fantasy TV show.
I like the type business, though.
They did. It's very similar to Stranger Things.
Yes.
Because Will did a lot of that.
I need to watch Stranger Things.
I know that.
It's brilliant.
It is brilliant. I know that Isabella will refute these claims, but that's the second thing in this story, which is quite similar to Stranger Things. And she will say that the writers of Stranger Things have never seen Doctor Who. I think that's very unlikely.
Mm. Very unlikely.
Right then. Mm. Writers tend to like to watch stuff
I was looking,
them,
by the way,
saying.
I was looking for anachronism there, because I double checked, and although tape technology did exist in 1941, it was very rare.
Sake.
It should have been magnetic wire.
Okay, I thought you might pick up on that one, but did I care? I was thinking, did I care? No, I didn't. Right then. Anyway, so there's a scene. I think I might mention it earlier.
Master.
What?
I have an entire box of all of the sound recorded off TV of Star Trek and Doctor Who.
Yeah, so do I.
Just like the sorts of things that people used to do,
yeah,
which gives us the missing episode sounds. And they're all on reel-to-reel tape.
Okay, well, thank you for that. I used to record Star Trek off the telly as well, because I didn't have a video recorder.
Kirby?
No, I don't have anything to play them on.
Kirby, did you take the I'm going to be as annoying as I can and interrupt as much as possible pill today? Because you are just...
Kirby's trying as hard as the Boris. Time to make a cup of tea. You know he's going to ignore us. Maybe you will go for a wee. I've just been told to turn it down. You got lucky there, Kirby. All right, then. So this scene here. I was trying to bring us into this scene here.
Help yourself to?
Yeah. I'd like some wire cutters, please. Something that can cut through barbed wire. Oh, and a torch. Don't look like that, Mr. Lloyd. I know you got plenty of tools in here. I've been watching this house for ages. And I'd like another look round your kitchen cupboards. I was in an hurry the first time. I want to see if there's anything I missed.
The food on this table...
It's an awful lot of food, isn't it, Mr. Lloyd? A lot more than on anyone else's table. Half this street thinks your missus must be messing about with Mr. Haverstock, the butcher. But she's not, is she? You are.
Love it. Anyway, right.
Sass, level.
A nice little twist,
100.
That. Anyway, so yeah, the Doctor, Rose and Jack sort of get a bit scared, but fortunately Jack's got a square gun. Is it a square gun?
What's it called? Yeah, a square blaster.
Square blaster, which allows
squareness
them to...
Squareness gun.
Squareness gun, that's it. So they're able to climb through holes and then fill the holes back up again. That gun reappeared quite recently in Doctor Who, actually, which is quite good to see.
Playing the same thing?
Yeah, and then they sort of get to a point where I think Jack just... sort of transports himself back to his ship and just leaves the Doctor and Rose on their own.
You think that's what's happening?
Eh?
You think that's what's happening? He's just left them.
Yeah, that's what you think. But he's obviously helping anyway. And Nancy rounds up a little band of children and tells one of them that he's basically got to take over and look after the others while she goes and does what
Lisa,
she needs to
can
do.
I have some more?
No, you can't. We're trying to do a podcast.
I love the typewriter noise. I had a proper typewriter. Yeah.
There's a lot of that in this episode, wasn't there? The typewriter's still going, nobody's typing it, and the radio's working, that's not plugged in, and there's all sort of little things like that. Which you think, well, how's that working? Because that's not a little child, is it? It's something sort of extra, sort of terrestrial.
I'm going to jump in here and be like a Kirby and just let you know that this scene of the children and the typewriter is one that they filmed almost a month later.
All right.
And inserted because there wasn't enough running time to this episode. And the kids were the only people they could get back to do it.
Oh, wow. See, that's an interesting fact, isn't it, Tamara? Well done, that's good. Anyway, right, so where do we get up to?
Poor Kirby.
So, and of course, Jack uses this radio speaker to, which allows him to talk to them via his spaceship, and, what's her name? Oh, yeah, Nancy makes her way through these barbed wires to the area where the bomb's likely to fall, and the initial... space thingy. It was like a hospital thing, wasn't it? I can't remember what it's called.
Kirby's taken everything very personally.
Yeah.
Who has?
He's put himself on mute.
Oh, that's a shame. That means the comedy element's gone in the show. Right, who's going to do the comedy element now? No? Okay.
No takers.
Looks like it's up to me then. Well, it's naturally going to be me anyway. Where do we get up to? Right, so... I've got... So I don't know what you're saying.
Do you not know where you are?
Sorry, yeah, messages coming. Hang on, it's got things coming left, right, and centre. It's slightly distracting me. Oh, hang on.
He's got a beef with you now, Mary.
Yeah, he's sassed up.
Where are we? Who am I looking at?
Kirby.
Yeah, I'll read it on here. Yeah, sorry, I'll just finish this part of the bit and then we'll move on to it. Yeah, it's all right. Thank you. No, it's all right. I can see it on here. Thank you. My assistant just helping me there with a thing that I couldn't see because
assistant?
I haven't got the pretty one in the house. Right then. So, hang on. What's happening here? Apologies to the viewers.
Viewers?
Right, hang on.
Have you turned it
I'm
off,
just answering
have you?
People. This doesn't work well on an audio presentation.
Muted himself.
That's me tapping keyboard. Don't wait, up to where to go. Right then, okay. I'm just going to read what people are saying on the feed. Jack shot Daleks with his gun in the New Year's episode. That's the point. Thank you for picking that. I couldn't remember exactly what it was. Thank you, Robert. And Brandon Moore said, Kirby's my favourite. Well, you can get ointment for that, Brandon. Anyway, back to talk to him. He's my favourite too. Right then, especially when completely lack Kirby of comedy then. When he's not on the show.
So sorry, Mary.
I am relying on Kirby because Ben's not on this week.
Yeah, I said I'd just like to pick on Kirby. You all know that.
Yeah,
that,
I know. I don't understand
job.
Why
it sounded like you were
so
being
personally.
A little. You were actually angry at me.
No, we were having a bit of fun, Kirby.
Kirby's insensitive time since the time change. It's all a bit weird.
Trying to get used to that, actually.
What I was trying to do is try and throw a spanner in midworks. And I was really focused on the podcast, and everything was going so well. And then I lost the plot. Where are we? Thank you, Deborah, for helping out. Not you, Deborah, the other Deborah.
Adam.
The nice-looking one. No offense. What?
You should read out some comments.
Is nice Nicola Bryant in it, says Brandon Moore.
No, read the one before
it. Neil James, really looking forward to Boob Town next week.
That's why we got the comment, is Nicola Bryant in it.
Very good. Right then, anyway, so the Doctor and Rose are trapped in a little room and have a little dance. The Doctor pretending he can't dance, he's slightly embarrassed about dancing with such a young person. And then in the middle of dancing, and I do like this, they didn't even notice they got transported to Captain Jack's ship.
Which is ridiculous.
Why is it ridiculous?
I just think it's ridiculous. The Doctor wouldn't have noticed. The Doctor wouldn't have noticed that.
He was putting the effort into dancing.
Well, I didn't bother about it. Sometimes the Doctor doesn't notice stuff.
He gets very distracted by Rose. It's very annoying.
Well, I think that's probably why he had to get rid of her in the end. Anyway, so meanwhile...
The squareness gun.
Yes.
Comes from the weapons factories of Villengard.
Isn't that a Viking place?
And those appeared... In fact, the part of the Twice Upon a Time was set at those weapons factories.
Ah. Well, that's a good bit of continuity then, wasn't it? Anyway, meanwhile, Nancy wandering through some dirty...
It was Moffat's first story and his last story.
Thank you. Meanwhile, Nancy is wandering through this thing, but she gets caught by a couple of soldiers, and they trap her in this room with a bloke that's obviously on the verge of turning into one of these weird things, and she realises...
Oh, bless him. Yeah, that's heartrending, that bit.
I do like this section of the thing, because they ignore her, and she's trying to talk this bloke out of what's going to happen.
Changing.
Yeah. And you think, how the hell is she going to get out of this one? And I do like the way she gets out of it. Meanwhile, Captain Jack, Rose, and the Doctor.
Master?
Yes?
The reason she sings that song is she used to sing it to Jamie.
I know. I just said I like the way she gets out of it.
Yeah, but right. You didn't mention the way.
Because we haven't got to that bit yet. Right, here we are. So Captain Jack tries to flirt with Prince Harry.
Shutting up, sir.
And yes, he does look like Prince Harry. I'm sorry, whether you don't like it or not. I didn't see Meghan there anyway, but Prince Harry just says, "Are you my mummy?" Which is a bit weird. Why would he say such a thing? Maybe he's a bit kinky. Of course, Jack realises he is going a bit funny. He's starting to look even more like Prince Harry, especially when his hat falls off. And then suddenly he turns into one of these really weird gas mask creatures. And, the Doctor's getting into a situation now where he doesn't know how they're going to get out of this. And then they find that the crashed... thingy, and everybody's together now, which is handy. Yeah, they've got Rose, Nancy.
You realize that Captain Jack's friend Algy was named for the Biggles stories?
No. Frankly, didn't really care. Don't know anything about the Biggles stories. Anyway, so like I forgot to say, so Nancy gets out of this by singing a lullaby to make this bloke fall asleep, which makes sense because of course they're all afflicted by Jamie-itis, shall we call it. I've invented that, but it fits. And then suddenly the Doctor presses something on the casket thing, which then triggers all these creatures to start sort of homing in on Nancy. And the Doctor gives Rose a sonic screwdriver and tells her to set it on a specific setting.
Ooh, I just made a connection.
Oh, gosh.
They're all going, "Mommy."
Yeah.
Then you realize the very first Night of the Living Dead, everyone's going, "Nancy, they're coming to get you, Nancy.
Coming to get you, Barbara."
Kirby.
Oh, it's Barbara. Okay.
Kirby.
I was wrong.
Kirby.
Bye.
Kirby. Barbara was in Stranger Things as well. Anyway, right then.
Pedanted. Yes.
Yeah, so he gives Rose this the setting on the sonic screwdriver, and I've got one of these sonic screwdrivers. There's no possible way of setting it to that, but it's a science fiction fantasy TV show, so I let them off. To put together.
Yours isn't real.
How do you know there's no way of setting it that way?
Because on my sonic screwdriver, there's no dials on it. It's just. Oh, shut up. Anyway, so they put the rather. Futilely put the barbed wire back together, and then Jack and the doctor have a bit of a discussion about the bomb, which is on its way. And Jack goes off to do a thing on the Belm because it's going to go bang, and the doctor doesn't want to go bang.
You know how there's Bad Wolf on the side?
What's got Bad Wolf on the side?
Of the bomb that he's riding.
I didn't know.
It's very difficult to see.
It's very difficult to see. I only get a good view of it from the DWN, the Doctor Who magazine.
Right, yeah. I've never been able to spot it while watching the story.
I haven't seen
it. You can just see a bit of Wolf, that's it.
And the German translation is not Bad Wolf. It's just worse than wolfing is what the German translation is.
Oh, thank you.
Worse than wolfing. I like that.
Anyway, right, so at this point, Nancy starts, the doctor starts realising that Nancy, because they're all homing in on her and she's being quite mumsy to everybody, starts realising that it might be all focusing on her and that she, in fact, is the mother of Jamie. And
she took a long while to do something about it.
Is admit to Jamie.
She just realised that she was his mother.
Yeah.
Well, she didn't want to admit it, but she doesn't realise that that's the reason.
I would think she would have been there.
That's the reason why that he's going, are you my mummy? And then she, yes, Jamie, I am your mummy. Yes, I am. Gives him a big cuddle.
I am your mummy. I've always been your mummy.
Yeah, and then all these nano thingies correct everything. Clever nano doodahs. And it's a lovely scene when he's
Yeah, but surely they'd correct the doctor.
What?
Wouldn't they correct the doctor?
Why?
Nanos.
Why?
Well, because he's told them all that she's the genetic marker for humans, repairing the humans. So why are the nanos not swarming around him going, what are you then?
Because he's not, apart from what the Doctor Who movie may lead you to believe, he's not human and they're looking for human DNA.
But Isla asked the question, so it was very difficult.
There you go, I've answered it for you. You can pass that on to her free of charge, that particular answer. Anyway, the doctor is thrilled to bits when obviously everybody, because everybody lives. And Captain Jack turns up, sat on a bomb. I don't know why he was sat on it, but anyway, it was quite a good effect nevertheless.
A bim?
And he sort of flies off trying to stop the bomb from exploding. The doctor gathers some regeneration energy. Oh no, sorry, it's some nano genes. And throws them all at the other people who are...
everybody lives.
We get this, this particular scene here.
Everybody lives!
Which is quite a good little soundbite in itself. And I'll be allowed to play that because that's less than 6 seconds long.
I don't think you need to worry about that. PRS police.
Everybody wakes up and the doctor asks Dr. Constantine to just pretend that he had nothing to do with it and just take the credit for it. And then we get this, which is one of this next scene is sort of one of the most underrated and, for me, forgotten scenes, but charming.
What it is.
Dr. Constantine.
Mrs. Harcourt, how much better you are looking.
My leg's grown back. When I
come
to the hospital...
I love that.
Yes, I knew that was
terrific.
Is it
war on?
You miscounted.
It's a war on. Is it possible you miscounted? That's so British.
You know, perhaps you miscounted.
Yeah. So the Doctor and Rose go back to the TARDIS. The Doctor's particularly happy, and they do sort of trying to dancing. Meanwhile, Captain Jack very soon realises his spaceship, he should have known this, has not got escape pod, and he can't dump the bomb outside, and it's basically going to explode, taking him with it. And there's a great scene that while Doctor and Rose are dancing and the camera pans out into the door frame of the TARDIS, and Captain Jack hasn't realised, because the TARDIS for once has materialised very quietly.
Yeah.
Quietly.
first time ever. It's
and
just
he
gone.
Escapes and they sort of ride off together. That's a lovely, but very long. Like Mary said, these scenes are quite long, probably just to pad it back out again. But that's really good.
More padding.
And that is the classic Inchy Child Doctor Dances, which I'm going to say what I thought about when I watched it at the time, which I thought was a bit of a triumph, to be fair. Not a motorbike that goes, I mean, a triumph as in, or a little sports car, as in a triumph in science fiction television and classical combinations. It had a great amount of creepiness in it, and I still found it a little bit creepy even now. It was just great. I mean, I think it would have anybody who wasn't a Doctor Who fan, and probably another reason why the viewing figures were going up and up. Stephen Moffat's first venture into proper Doctor Who, of course, laid down his reputation that would lead to him taking over and trying to ruin it. But this this was a fantastic story, and even with the padded out bits, it was so enjoyable that it didn't really affect me in any way. It was it could, I think they, like you say, they could have made it one episode and just sort of had it so as she give him a hug at the end of episode one, but then you wouldn't have had all these other really fun Captain Jack things. And I've always said I'm a big fan of Captain Jack, and it's funny how thin and young John Barrowman looks in this.
Yeah.
And he's not fat now, he's just muscular now. He's got a sort of, you know, quite a sort of buff bloke now, but then
and he's got white hair.
And he's got white hair. He probably was going white then. But yeah, it's difficult to sort of fault this particular story, because it is a really, really good one. And even now, actually, no, me and Deb didn't fall asleep while watching Father's Day. Not sorry, Empty Child last night. Father's Day.
That's
a good sign. It was quite good. Yeah. It is. I think the fact that it was able to make one of my children never want to watch it has got to be because it's so scary. It has got to be a good point that it was on the right lines for really, really good creepy. Sort of slightly horror TV show. Brilliant, brilliant stuff. And I still think it's good to this day. What did you think about it, Kirby?
It's one of the most absolutely perfect Doctor Who stories ever.
Oh, is that it?
Right. Well done, Kirby.
Brilliant. Wow, hang on. This could be one of these.
Wow. What the hell?
Okay, Debbie, what do you think?
By the way, I've been able to absolutely prove this, but as I understand it, the entry in Radio Times for The Empty Child, when it was first broadcast, mentions that London is being stalked by an unearthly child.
Well, there you go. Ooh. Now, there's no way I can rewind that Hallelujah chorus, so you just have to.
Damn it.
You should.
Right, Debbie, what did you think of it?
I like to call this one of the marker episodes of New Who. I think this spawns an awful lot of future stories, future spin-offs, future, you know, this is really a jump point for Doctor Who. And watching it the first time, I was just enchanted by it as a story. It is such a nice bit of, it, of course it's silly, it's, you know, it's a silly story. It's,
well, it's not,
it's silly.
There are silly elements in it, but
Jack,
yeah.
Captain Jack gets them to, you know, basically the whole reasoning behind it is like a MacGuffin, really, you know, him coming, him the Tula warship. But it is just
when he likes Indian food.
Am I going to be able to talk without Kirby?
Nobody is.
Right.
Yeah. So Kirby can interrupt Adam without problems, but interrupt any of the rest of us.
Hey, we need Ben to interrupt me.
Oh, you're only saying that because he's not here.
I think this one, the music is terrific. The shots in this are brilliant. The long pan shots that they do throughout is just fantastic. Just so you get the scope of the set pieces that they do, because you go from tiny rooms, because it makes you feel claustrophobic, to this lovely set piece, but it still has, there's usually like bars or something around it. So it's a very enclosed episode. And it's just so creepy, the right level of creepiness in it, the caring for the kids, you know, the problems that was going on during the war, the fact that everybody seems to think that all the kids were evacuated. Mm. It's the way we are taught here. All the kids were evacuated. So, no, they weren't.
There was a couple of throwaway lines that the kids sort of ran back because they were getting abused.
Kids came back. They were brought back. So these kids are... Yeah, because nothing happened, and then the bombing started. So yeah, this it's heartrending to know what our grandparents went through. You know, just the Blitz. We lost a lot of family in the Blitz, and it's just because my gran was a Cockney lady, bless her, and it's just so nice to have a story where the Doctor hasn't necessarily got the Spock but he's got the pizzazz to get them out of trouble. And it is just such a glorious end just to go, everybody lives for a change, because we've had a couple of down stories and, you know, stories that make you your heart hurt, like Dalek and Father's Day. And this one was a lot more joyful ending. And that whole ending with that lady with her leg grown back and then dancing and rescuing Captain Jack, and the way he looked at Jack at the end, like challenging him, you better be good, which means welcome aboard. I think that's an absolutely wonderful end to it. And when I first watched it, I've seen this God knows how many times now, and I never, ever get tired of it. 5 out of 5.
Marvellous. You said about the everybody lives thing. It was really, really good in this story, but then Moffat thought, oh, it quite well in that story. Let's use it in every single story that I write.
That's the problem. This is one of the things why I call it a marker episode, because it's good for good and bad. Mm. Lots of ideas from this become bigger ideas, but Moffat liked the whole living thing.
And Moffat ends up repeating. And repeating and repeating.
Yes. Doesn't bring this particular character back, but yes. Lillian Robbins says all the kids came back on their own because of abuse in the countryside. Yeah. And I don't mean the tortured episode Countryside with the CID,
are definite
that's
hints
just a little bit different.
That was
mention that. Yeah, they came back. It is. No one ever got vetted about where the kids were going. They were just shunted off and handed over to people.
Yeah, who knows? You might end up with
you read now. You can read some of the kids' diaries and things, you know, and YouTube will have things as well. And it's just hard.
Hey, not everyone knows. Some people had a
I'm saying everybody.
Some of those kids might end up with apprentice witches and go wandering off with bedknobs and broomsticks.
Well, that's the thing, you see, because that's always good. And plus, a lot of people who were evacuated to the Isle of Wight stayed married. A lot of island families have London.
And others end up going through wardrobes.
Oh, yeah, you got that as well.
Okay. And we have the Boxcar Kids.
Fancies.
There's a theme you're developing here, that a lot of stories were written in these times to sort of give children a means for escape. From what was happening.
Hard times for everybody involved. But some people got lucky, some people didn't. That is the way the cards dealt now. So it is unfortunate, but those kids had Nancy looking after them, and that was brilliant.
Thank you. Robert, what did you think?
That makes me nearly
got there.
Nearly got there, Robert.
Nearly.
Got to wait for Kirby, though.
Robert, what did you think?
Did you get it out, Kirby?
Beg your pardon?
Put it back in. I mean, I have a few problems with this,
What?
No, just let's hear me out.
Kirby, people are allowed to not like it like we do.
There were a few lights going on outside and, like, the fire to keep the soldiers warm, which, well, let's put a X marks the spot where to bomb kind of thing. I don't think that was a good idea.
Oh,
dear. Robert.
But also, what?
It's a science fiction fantasy TV program.
Kirby, you have no space to say that with the things you're taking.
Exactly.
You're moaning about the tape player, and what else was it?
Besides, Captain Jack turned on the lights behind the Queen's Tower clock face.
He did. So it's his fault.
Yeah.
Carol, I used to call it Big Ben.
Why?
Because it's not.
Big Ben's bell.
Get on with it.
Okay. There were some really lovely things. Like, I thought the 10th Doctor, what's his name? He's the 9th Doctor, isn't he? he was so good with those kids, you know, when he turns up at their meal. And I just loved his enthusiasm with the kids there. Yes.
Well, they loved him, didn't they?
Yeah. And you can see him feeding off, you know, being with innocent people like that. I thought that was a nice scene. And also, I still love that transformation with the gas mask. I mean, it's just so creepy when you see the eyes swarming and things like that of the gas mask. And it was such a cool idea. And also, what was this? Something else I was thinking of. I can't remember.
Robert, that transformation is scary as hell as well.
And the tape thing. Before Moffat overused those sort of ideas, I mean, I like that. And the bit with which Mary tells us was added on with the typewriter typing by itself. I mean, those were nice things before Moffat overused those sort of ideas. And just goes to show that Moffat, when he was just a contributor as a writer, not writing every second episode.
Brilliant.
But yeah, he did really well.
Robert, you're technically correct. He is a 10th Doctor. Remember the War Doctor.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
God.
Thanks. Do I get a ting for that?
No.
Yes.
No.
Oh, okay.
Where's Debbie's? Debbie has a bell that she could use.
I bet she does. Well, we're trying to get on with the podcast.
I'm upstairs.
Aww. Anyway, some things I didn't like was RTD2, when he's being interviewed, he mentions about the relationship between Jack and the Doctor because the Doctor really fancies Rose and hears somebody moving in his territory. I don't like that.
No.
I don't like when the Doctor's lusting after the companion or the companion.
I didn't get that at all, but carry on.
It's not right, is it? It is not right.
No.
I didn't get that he was lusting after himself, but there you go. Carry on.
Well, you know how he got really antsy with Barrowman?
I think he was jealous of her, you know, because it's his companion, not necessarily in a sexual way, but the fact that...
Well, not according to R.T. Dutu.
Oh, God.
He spoils
it for me.
I don't like that.
And the Doctor was going after Mickey too, you know, so you do get that impression that, you know, it's his territory.
Yeah. Okay.
But also, what was it? No, that's my train of thought.
Sorry.
It's my fault.
No, 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 who's in charge?
You are,
master. it was something to do with the relationships. I've lost my train of thought now.
Yeah, we were talking about the Doctor lusting after Rose before I.
It's about Rose as well. It's like every episode where there's a good looking guy.
She's a 19-year-old girl. She would do.
And I don't like that. I mean, it's very nasty to Mickey, who did nothing wrong in the first place. And even the way that... I don't even like the way the Doctor treats Mickey as well.
No, I don't like it. I agree. But it's a part of character development.
So, I just think having Rose meet the guy of the episode and fall in love with him, it just makes her seem such a nasty sort of woman, like... It's like a guy who sleeps around, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's not very nice. No. So I don't like those sort of aspects of it. But otherwise, I quite enjoyed it. And it's enjoyable watching them again.
Yes.
It still seems quite fresh and full of energy. And I love that it ends the episode in
a positive way.
Everybody lives. But also, like... I just love that little scene at the end where they're playing the music. I mean, I love, Glenn Miliband music. I think that was lovely to have playing. And it was a nice, positive way to end the episode. So you get uplifted by it and you don't often sort of come to something and you feel, oh, that's like a triumph, as you said.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good.
I think Brandon Moore says, I don't have a problem with 19-year-old girls lusting after me. Yeah, you and me both, Brandon. And Lillian Robbins says, not only is there another Jack walking around, there's another one buried. Yes, if you've watched.
Yes, there is. Jack buried. For yeah. Yes.
Well done, under. Lillian. You get one of these.
Yay!
Now, this is the bit that everybody's been waiting for. What does Mary think of it?
Well, overall, I enjoy it every time I watch it. Mm. And of course, you have to watch the two together. So
does sound like there's a butt coming.
I think thanks to Moffat, he writes wonderful dialogue. I love that whole exchange when they're together and the doctor trading the banana for the blaster and all that. I mean, yeah. that is just so Moffat and so good. And Rose in the tractor beam, you know, when Jack yells, "Hold on," she goes, "To what?"
Yeah. Fair point.
Mean, there's just so much good dialogue in this. And I think that's something that Doctor Who doesn't always, you know, get without yes. writers. However, my big issue with the whole thing is it's wartime. It's London getting bombed. It's blackout time. And as Robert brought up, you know, not only are there fires burning, but the streetlights are on. Mm-hmm. And there's Jack mm-hmm. standing in an open window, you know, looking at Rose hanging yeah. from the rope in a bright lit room. And nobody's going, "Close the curtains." And then, you know, the topper, of course, is also what Robert mentioned. He lights up Big Ben. So it's like, I think we're in wartime, and I think that the blackout, you know, should have been maybe made a bigger thing of than it was. Because I'm sitting there just saying, shut the lights off, close the curtains, yeah. turn that light out.
Yeah. They did have tape on the windows, though, which was...
just doesn't seem like anybody cares.
Well, there would have been military police around to make sure people did that.
Yeah, that's what I thought. There were those little, you know, volunteer people who run around making sure.
Yeah.
So that bothered me a lot. And the other thing that bothered me was the Blitzkrieg being presented as this romantic, beautiful, you know, background for a romance. Because I mean, the scenery is gorgeous. You know, the shots of the clouds and the balloons and all that. And there's Jack dancing with Rose on top of his ship and that. And I'm thinking, you know,
and the bombers are going by beautifully.
Yeah. You know, this is beautiful. Oh, wait a minute. This is
while
horrible.
People are getting blown to smithereens. Yeah.
And what I want to know is, now, we Americans did not go through anything like that. And we were a little bit late to the game, you know, coming to help things out. And I just wonder, with British children who went through this, who've grown up as adults and look at this, or even the children who didn't directly experience it in Britain that are growing up with that in their history and the stories that they're being told, I would think stories taking place during this time would be somewhat traumatic to you all. I feel like there's a disservice being delivered here to the people of Britain when it is, like I said, being laid out as a lovely background. Yeah,
from what I get from people that I've spoke to who did it, I mean, like, she's passed away a few years ago, but the next door neighbour, when they did a World War II theme thing at the primary school, all the kids had to go to school wearing World War II type clothes, and we had to create
gas mask boxes
for them. Yeah, and I spoke to Joan, who was my next door neighbour at the time, who was alive at the time and remembered it, to get the size of the gas mask box and to get a bit of accuracy in what it was going to look like. And what I get from the people who lived through it is that they were very upbeat and British about it, and basically, you know, obviously people were getting killed and blown up, but you wouldn't have got through it without a bit of
lit spirit,
a bit of banter, and a bit of British spirit, and just seeing.
Can
the
I
light
just say,
life,
Mary
you know?
Worsley's put a new program out. It's only just come out in February on BBC iPlayer about the Blitz, and it's diaries of people who worked as wardens and nurses and fire guards and things like that, and it's been utterly heartbreaking and fascinating.
Yeah. Oh, I would like that.
It's all very good.
If anybody's really curious about what the people on the ground were thinking, it's brilliant. We haven't
What's
even
it called?
Started the second episode yet. I think it's just called Blitz Spirit, but it's Lucy Worsley, the resident brilliant historian that the Beeb have at the moment, and she's sensational. And this dramatization of the diaries with her narration and talking about things, and it is, it's been really good.
That's good.
Yes. So just to reiterate, as much as I enjoy the story overall, the dialogue, the sets, everything about it, it still bothers me. You know, deep in my heart, I'm asking, what are Brits thinking when they look at this being treated so lightly? And that does bother me. I'm going to tune into that.
There was a lot of tragedy going on, but they lived through it and coped with it with lightheartedness and Britishness.
Yeah,
And in spite of it, in spite of it, I did read that this is still the most watched of the modern Doctor Who episodes by Brits.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, so it's like, well, okay, maybe it isn't traumatizing.
Maybe it is something about us just looking our fears square in the face and going, yeah, okay, we can see more horror monster with
that. We've done that a little bit with COVID, hasn't it, really, to be fair?
Yeah. So what my dad wasn't like that, though.
Huh?
My dad, because he would have been 7 at this when this was set.
Well, perfect age for them.
Huh?
The perfect age, because obviously there was children of that age within the story itself.
But he, I mean, he liked World War II movies. And I'm talking about maybe the heroic World War II movies, not the serious one.
Well, like you know, he wouldn't... heroes.
Yeah. Maybe it's good to kind of lets out some of that feeling you have inside to watch these things.
But you know, something like Schindler's List, he would not go near.
Ooh, yeah.
I still haven't been able to watch that one.
I don't think I could watch it again.
No, that's one thing I do steer clear of, because even though it's slightly disrespectful for the people who died in the Holocaust, but it's so painful. You know what happened, but to be reminded constantly about how these people were treated and how they died and how brave they must have been and how fearful and you just can't imagine what they went through.
I don't know why, but I've been studying the Holocaust lately for some reason. In the last 2 months, after I had a dream about being in a concentration camp, I just suddenly went, I woke up and that's it. I'm just digesting every book I can find, every documentary on YouTube. You're just, for some reason, and I'm wondering if I'm about to write something or something, I don't know, but it's definitely like I'm researching and I don't know why.
What was the name of that program that you talked about on the iPlayer?
It's probably called
Blitz Spirit, but let me just have a look.
I found it on YouTube. I'll send you a link.
Okay.
Anyway, sorry, Mary, carry on.
That's what I wanted to say. It really is a great story. I have a lot of trouble with the portrayal of the Blitzkrieg, and I'm just shocked that it's mostly watched and rewatched by Brits.
It's called Blitz Spirit with Lucy Worsley. There you go.
I just sent a link to the 20 megabytes.
Because obviously I can't do it.
We all heard it arrive anyway.
Stop doing it then, Kirby.
Okay.
Stop doing it.
Are you done, Mary?
I'm done. I am done.
Dinner.
Brandon Moore says, is Glenn Miliband related to Ed Miliband?
That's a bit of chin and a half, one.
Lillian Robin, the Doctor is obsessed with bananas. Always bring a banana to a party in A Girl in the Fireplace, and he switched another gun for a banana in Let's Kill Hitler. Now, it's funny that, because I've got the Ninth Doctor Funko Pop holding a banana, and I'd say, why is he holding that banana? And now I know. And then Brandon Moore says, the 20 megabyte Blitz podcast.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
Before I move on to the next segment of the show, and you're talking about history programs, there's a really good one with that Scottish bloke that always reminds me of David Tennant, Neil something or other.
Oliver.
Neil Oliver. He's done a series about the Vikings, which is absolutely brilliant. So
isn't
good.
That
of course,
really old one.
Where I'm descended from Vikings, of course. It was particularly interesting to me. Sorry,
are you
an old one? I don't know. It's on BBC Four.
I am.
You're an old one, are you?
No, I'm descended from Vikings.
I was descended first because I was born in 1966. When were you born?
Just the way Kirby was incredulous. Kirby was like, are you? It's like, yeah, quite a lot of us are over here.
Yes. Kirby, right, I'll give you some number crunching to go before we move on to the second part of the show. Have you got a calculator with you?
No.
Very quiet all of a sudden. Right, so there's one.
All you have to do is ask Alexa.
Oh, don't do that. Use a calculator. Right then.
We were trying to do that when you couldn't hear us.
Yeah. The job is, right, just think, let's think on this
and
one.
And then
right.
Jesus turned up. It was
Debbie.
Amazing.
Debbie. Right, Kirby. Right, there's one of you, thankfully. I mean, sorry. There's one of you, right, two of your parents, four of your grandparents, what? Eight of your great-grandparents. Keep multiplying that generation number back to about 1,000 years, which is about 30 generations, and you end up with 4.5 billion potential great-great-great-great and so forth grandparents. Some of them will be the same people, because that's how it is sometimes. You intermatch and you end up, your ancestral lines merge to the same person.
Intermatch or intermarry.
You intermatch. Yes.
But even with that in consideration, the population of the UK at that time was 2.5 million. So therefore, everybody that's of British, Celtic and Scandinavian descent is likely to be descended from Vikings and the early British, well, English kings like William the Conqueror and stuff. The fun part of it is finding that particular road to those people, which I'm luckily able to say I have. Anyway, right, so Kirby, you have a particular part of the show, when you've finished your number crunching, a particular part of the
Why
show.
Why would I bother number crunching?
Well, because I told you the answer.
You still might.
You're being pedantic.
You have a particular part of the show which is yours and yours alone, which is...
Yes, I asked for feedback, including a picture of Gaius from Camelot. No, I mean...
Sorry, I thought that was a pig. I thought that was a pig with a muzzle on, so I apologize. Now I see what it is.
It was.
Okay, carry on.
The first comment was from Lillian, saying, isn't this the first story featuring Captain Jack? And she's got a picture of Captain Jack Sparrow.
Yeah. I like that.
Robert Haynes, whoever he is, are you my mummy? I responded, no, I'm afraid I'm not your mummy. And Lillian also says, I'm not your mummy either.
So
And Neil James has a picture of one of the mummies from the Sarah James.
Pyramids of Mars.
Yes, Pyramids of Mars. Yeah. And also, no one here but us chickens. we get to actually see what Robert Wince Jr. looks like.
Yeah, eating a banana.
He's taking a banana selfie, because bananas are good.
Why not?
Banana selfies are good.
I do particularly like his lockdown beard. Brilliant. Carry on.
Mine's
that might be his usual beard.
Your lockdown beard's what?
I shaved my mustache off.
Yeah, we saw that.
Yes.
Your garden shot.
That's because I got tired of
you getting stuck in it?
Dying it.
Oh, did you dye it?
Yes, because it was turning white.
Remember that?
I'm old.
It was all right for when John Barrowman. It should be all right for you, mate.
Yeah.
Robert Wince Jr. says, my review of The Empty Child, The Doctor Dances. Another favorite of mine. First full story written by Stephen Moffat, who's a better writer than producer or showrunner.
Indeed.
Exactly.
First appearance of Captain Jack. It's great we see him in later episodes. Funny to think of the 11th Doctor and Amy being in the same time period as the 10th Doctor and Rose. Rose likes using Star Trek words.
Yeah.
Enjoyed the gas mask and zombie people. Great lines like, just this once, Rose, everyone lives. And show me some Spock. Oh, Rose, nice Union Jack t-shirt. Also, wasn't Jack at the same time working for Torchwood since the late 1800s? Just saying. Wonderful story with the horror story in World War II. Also, the Doctor can dance at the end with Rose. My rating, 5 out of 5. Are you my mummy?
And
Brandon says, "Beep." Ian says, I am tired and have not watched the episodes, and I suggest that Adam has the feedback from 9 years ago.
Is that what you suggested, or him?
That he could reply. Yeah,
I suggested it.
Great.
Ian also says, I got a new mobile phone this week through the post. It was sent at Greenford Mail Center, Perivale. The Seventh Doctor's companion, Ace, is also from Perivale.
Indeed.
So is the animatronic cat. What's that have to do with this particular story?
He's got deviated somewhere along the line.
Yes. Neil James. The Empty Child, The Doctor Dances. So much cool stuff happens at the start of this. The Blitz setting is great, and we quickly get a slinky club singer, followed by the Doctor doing a bit of stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Rose and her excellent bottom dashes off to save a kid, but ends up in the flight path. Ends up in the flight path of a squadron of German bombers, and the TARDIS phone rings. But how? It's a sensational opening to a story, and the quality hardly drops at all in this remarkable two-parter. Little Jamie in the gas mask is pretty damn terrifying, and I love how the director shoots him like he's making a horror movie. The scene when he tries to get into the house to join the other kids is amazing, and it doesn't stop there.
No.
The moment the patients all suit up in the hospital has to be one of the most eerie moments across all of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Captain Jack Harkness gets one hell of a story to debut in, and I've forgotten how good he is. John Barrowman has immediate chemistry with both Chris and Billy.
Yeah.
The actress playing Nancy gives a strong performance, and it's awesome to see Richard Wilson, despite only having limited screen time. And everybody lives!
Do they?
A rare happy ending to what is to be one of the scariest Doctor Who tales. Sorry to the Ninth Doctor haters, but I need to gush about this man.
Are there any?
He's amazing.
He's amazing!
Yeah, who hates him?
Yeah.
I know some people who don't like him. Anyway,
really?
Doesn't Kirsty not like him?
Oh, yeah, really? She doesn't. She's not that keen.
Yeah. Okay. The scene when he is trying to escape the room, but Rose invites him to dance, is gorgeously acted. His utter joy when he realizes that the nanogenes can fix everyone is stunning to watch. I adore this story, and its only drawback is that it always leaves me frustrated, angry, and sad that Christopher Eccleston only did 13 episodes.
Indeed.
He really is fantastic. blank out of 5. I'm sure he said 5 out of 5, but it's not showing.
Yeah, well, Neil, make sure you go to Big Finish, because he's starting up there.
Yeah.
I know. So
exciting, isn't it? Is that it then, Kirby?
That's it.
Marvellous. Right then. I sent through some stuff to dictate through the dulcet tones of Mary Lang.
Okay. And this is from the Miles duo. Okay. It says, "Hi, everybody. During the London Blitz, a spaceship crashes in the middle of a railway yard, and the TARDIS arrives soon after in an alley nearby. The Doctor finds a young girl breaking into houses during an air raid while Rose chases after a boy in a gas mask. Rose meets Captain Jack, and they all try to find out why everybody in the local hospital has the same physical injuries as the little boy, including a very tight gas mask. It seems that it was okay to light up the clock faces of the Elizabeth Tower during an air raid. Mr. Hodges would have had a fit shouting, 'Put that light out!' Mm-hmm. That's from Dad's Army, a wartime comedy shown in case the Americans don't know him." No, we don't. Go to your room. I'm very angry with you. I'm glad that worked. Those would have been terrible last words. Yeah. My leg's grown back. When I came to the hospital, I had one leg. Well, there is a war on. Is it possible you miscounted? All in excellent CGI with the transformations of the Victor Meldrew Doctor and the officer. What's next? Oh, great one of the family Slitheen survived the explosion in Downing Street. Stay safe and well. Linda and Terry Miles."
It was marvelous work.
Marvelous.
Yes, you did a great job.
Yes, very good. I've had this come through, and I've done some jiggery-pokery with the audio while you were reading that.
Well, good afternoon, 20 megabytes, Andrew in here. It is just going to 2 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. I'm just finishing off a delicious lunch we had delivered for Mothering Sunday. Sadly, I couldn't get a lovely dawn out to lunch, so I had lunch delivered here instead. God blimey, I'm stuffed now. Anyway, the Empty Jar of Doctor Dance is very good episode, very good story indeed. It's it's an interesting one where the baddie wasn't really a baddie at all, because it was just almost an accident that was happened because of somebody being stupid, i.e. Jack. And of course, let's talk about Jack. You know, he's somebody who's quite a character, isn't he? I mean, you think he's still going now. What, 16 years on, he's still, still in the series, and of course we had torture and things like that. Mm-hmm. He's a very, very interesting character, because you find out more about him, and the way, he's almost a bit like a brigadier in a way, that he interacts with different incarnates of doctors. He's probably more used to it, because he's certainly more broad-minded. And every time he comes along, you find out more about him. He's off to the start. I mean, you think at the beginning, he's just an American who's happened to be serving the RAF. And then you find out he's not. He's actually a time agent. Well, he was a time agent. He's a con man. He's doing this. Then he thinks he's going to die at the end. And, of course, he doesn't, because he gets saved and becomes a companion. He's blooming complex, isn't he? But he's one of the better characters in New Who, I think. And the story itself, as I say, it does rattle along quite well. There's a lot of strands to it. And you wonder which is the main one. You've got the woman with children in the Blitz. I wonder how realistic that was. Did that actually happen? Probably did, actually, if you think about it. You've got the Black Market here. You've got the jazz clubs. You've got the wonderful musical Glenn Miller, who is, you know, I do love his music, and he's so good. And you get the slightly ridiculous thing of Rose being carried away by a balloon and not falling off it. Well, not until the very end, and a few skid marks on hands being fixed by nanobits. Nanobits? No, not nanobits. Whatever. Which, of course, you include for Webb's coming along. The Doctor, some great lines from him. You know, I think about when he's talked about Jack and his wide variety of tastes. Well, the 51st century, so many species, so little time. I think that it's things like that that just get slipped in. That if you didn't spot them, you're not going to, you know, doesn't lose anything. Someone could hear it and think nothing to it. But there are some very, very good dry humour in there, things like that. Again, the end with Dr. Constantine, the lady whose leg had grown back. Yes, do you think you might have miscounted? And it's, where did Nancy and Jamie go? They just seem to disappear suddenly. I think the doctor did say they were going to go with the doctor, Dr. Constantine, that is. But they just did disappear before he blew everything up. And Doctor dancing at the end. He's got the moves. It's a shame, you know, you look at him now. Look, he seemed to be enjoying the series. I guess by now he'd all made the decision not to continue. And it's just a shame because you just realise how far he could have taken the Doctor. Mm. Then, of course, we'd never have Tennant, would we? And all the fangirls, who were they? Let us not go there. I like the reference to the T-shirt and the U-boat captain. Yes, that was a good one. But all in all, I think it's a thoroughly good story. It really just rattled along quite well. The end that you don't quite expect it to be, that's what it's really all about, and that's how they're doing it. And, of course, the last thing, so appropriate, on Mothering Sunday, about a mother's love. Be seeing it.
Thank you, Andy. He did do an additional statement. He says, I forgot to mention that I watched the episodes this morning. While I was doing so, I suddenly heard the voice calling, Mommy, Mommy. Of course, it was Stormageddon, but it didn't make me jump.
Oh, my gosh. Poor Andy.
Yeah.
Yes?
I was looking up locations.
Yeah, oh, God.
For this story.
Wales.
And the where the bomb was. Where,
you mean
where
the bell?
Chula, or the Chula ambulance thing, that railway.
Yeah.
That's the Barry Island tourist railway. It's within a 5-minute walk of where the tourist camp from Delta and the Bannerman used to be.
Ooh.
Thank you for that, Kirby. Okay, go on then.
Go on. Yeah, that's good, that one.
Yeah, okay, mm-hmm. Very good. Brandon Moore says on the live feed via the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which you can join.
Sorry.
Sneezing right in the middle of that statement. Brandon Moore says, John Barrowman keeps dying. Captain Jack keeps dying. Very good. You like your puns, don't you, Kirby? We also, because it's Brandon, have this.
It's brilliant. I'm not sure if it's Marxism in action or a West End musical. Good afternoon, 20 Megabyte podcasters. This is Mr. M with some feedback for The Empty Child and The Doctor Dances by Stephen
Moffat.
Moffat. Anyway, and directed by James Hawes.
Yes.
I think that's how that's pronounced. I first saw this episode on broadcast. This was the first episode of Doctor Who that I ever saw.
Wow.
And it's pretty scary. I was the same age that Alicia was, Adam, so I kind of had the same reaction. I actually found Christopher Eccleston quite scary, but I was able to kind of make it through the episode until the scene where Dr. Constantine transforms into a gas mask creature. And yeah, I did not watch any more Doctor Who until the next series because it was pretty scary. I haven't been able to go back and revisit it though. And it's a really, really good story. It's, a lot of the Moffat tropes that he would reuse come into action for the first time here. One of the big ones is the whole technology gone wrong. Both this, The Girl in the Fireplace, and Silence in the Library a lot of other ones during his era, although none come to mind straight away, generally are technology on autopilot and the nanogenes automatically assuming, hey, this is what humans look like. It's very clever, but it is abused. But this is probably the best example of it because it's not too glaring. Also, recordings of children's voices, used again most notably in The Impossible Astronaut and Dave the Moon. Captain Jack, though, is something that Stephen Moffat has never reused, never written for that character again. This is Jack at his best here. He's more believable as a human being than he is in some of the late excesses of the character. But John Barrowman's pretty good. Nice to have someone who's an experienced time traveller that isn't the Doctor. I can't think of any time other than Romana where we've really had that in the show before. So it adds a sort of new, very 21st century character for a 51st century guy. And, of course, the seeds of Torchwood sort of starting to be sown. Not a lot else I can think to say off the top of my head. The whole kind of Spock reference, I know that in one of the early drafts, that was kind of leading up to a punchline where I think the Ninth Doctor at some point, he says that he doesn't like being called Mr. Spock because I always prefer Doctor Who to Star Trek. And yeah, I can kind of see why that line got cut. But it's a good story. Good cliffhanger, good resolution. Go to your room.
I will do.
That would have been good last lines. And then next week, Boomtown.
Indeed.
Dinner with Death. Dinner with Monsters. Was that a working title? Anyway, that's next week. Until then, bye.
Thank you, Mr. M. Brandon Moore. Marvellous stuff. There's one thing left to do, and that's over to you, Mrs. Melrose.
Uh-oh.
That's rather bizarre.
Hang on, I was on mute. I do apologise. I started.
That was very, very strange with a silence.
I do apologise. There was lots of walking about going on. Rose decides to excite patricide, or 1987 is the Isle of Wight Reaper Weeper. Dear 20 megabyters. Father's Day? What? You've sent me Father's Day.
Did I?
Yes.
Oops.
Do you want me to read it? I will.
No, I do not.
Yeah.
Because Mary had already managed to get through those few syllables.
I tell you what, it's definitely interesting when that happens.
How about that one, then?
If I don't read ahead, that sort of things happen. I do apologise.
Just testing.
Yeah, just testing. Here we go. Take 79. Thank heavens we found out about Jack's missing 2 years or sonic magic settings. That's more like it. Dear 20 megabyters, the empty child the Doctor dances is, of course, a closely studied examination of public health measures and why proper controls and evaluation are vital to their implementation. The nanites embody just how power such systems can be, and therefore how badly things can inadvertently go if mismanaged by someone with a priority of personal gain. However, as the Doctor demonstrates, such methods hold the potential to provide an effective solution, even to problem it has created, if there is well-implemented correction made. It should be noted that while some might fail to see why the Doctor didn't get hold of Winston Churchill to get access to the crash site, if in fact there obviously wasn't time for all that and Ian McNeice hadn't been cast at that time anyway. We also learn that being an out-and-out con man like Jack is much more allowable than being a bit avaricious or knowledgeable like Adam. All in all, the empty child the Doctor dances is a very accomplished and evocative story with the excitement of a dramatic setting, manifestly spooky lines and visuals, and a joyful conclusion which for once in this series actually involves the Doctor working things out and carrying out a solution. We can be reassured this is our Doctor, not just from Eccleston's compelling performance, but from the character's actions. A wonderful supporting cast and a very engaging situation makes this an outstanding story in the history of the show. Jack's introduction is both new and intriguing, assuring us of a colourful end on its way for this series. This story is perhaps a few minutes too short, as who would not want to see more euphemistic banging on about dancing? Well, maybe not. Oh my god. Okay. Next, Doctor Who and the Clwedu Cymru Cleol, local Welsh politician. What came first, the Raxacora Cephalopatorian or the egg? Those are my thoughts. Alan T. Butcher. Eat it. I got it.
Oh, he snuck that in there. He has it this time and he's going to have it next time too.
I'll tell you what, something just dawned on me. When you said earlier on about being descended from the Vikings, Debbie.
Yes.
That means we could be related.
Oh, Adam, we're cousins.
Ooh. Right then, thank you. Doctor Who News. Unfortunately, I could not find anything from Ian Kirk. I'd been trolling, is that the right word?
Yeah,
going through all the old emails, there's a good 300 or 400 of them, and none of them had any reference to Dr. Dance's Empty Child.
So maybe you didn't like it.
Did you want me giving an approximate date?
Can do, but there was nothing in any of the email titles that would indicate that that was the episode. We can try if you like.
Trawling,
that's a good word, Ryan.
Yeah, trawling.
That's the one.
Early, it would have been early March of 2012.
Early March of 2012. This is going to be the
I've just realised I can't use my bell because it sounds different to Adam's. Listen.
Yes, it's copyright. You shouldn't be allowed to use it.
So you went downstairs to fetch the bell.
No, I'm downstairs because Isla and Tom are upstairs now.
But then we at least know that it's your bell.
Yeah, that's fine. That means you get a Debbie ding. That's even rarer.
Yeah, a Debbie ding.
Debbie ding.
Right. Debbie I haven't got ding. Any emails.
Well, I don't have any bell, so I've got a no bell.
Kirby no bell.
Oh, jeez. Anyway, nothing at that
wishes
time.
He had a no bell. Nobel Prize.
Is my microphone working? Hello?
Nobel Prize.
Hello? Is it working?
Yes.
Oh, good.
What? Who's talking?
Right then, so Doctor Who News. This isn't actually on the news feed, but just came up and I found it quite interesting. It says, It's a sin star, Ollie Alexander. I'll start that again. It's a sin star, Ollie Alexander, could be time-travelling back to Gloucestershire as Doctor Who. I think he'd be good as the Doctor. He's very sort of alien-ish. Good actor and... good for the LGBT thing, but
yeah,
I don't think he will.
Young again, isn't he? And
I don't think he will be, because he would if Russell T. Davis was in charge of the show. He'd be number one choice, but Russell T. Davis isn't, and I don't think Ollie Alexander, even though he'd be great. I think he may be in Doctor at some point.
I think to even the way for a bit more, we need the gravity of an older Doctor again, be it male or female, but
maybe,
we need
maybe.
The gravity of...
But
of,
we've still got the current Doctor... and I'm allowed to say that this week because Ben's not on the show. Right.
This Jo Martin.
Jo Martin, yeah, again. I don't think she'll be back for a bit, maybe for cameo
she
appearances.
She did mention, though, I think, apparently, with a if there was a spin-off show in the works, she'd be up for it. So.
Let's hope she is. That'd be good. Doctor Who Appreciation Society is auctioning a piece of Alistair Pearson's artwork from the Keeper of Tarkin audiobook to raise funds for the Anthony Nolan Trust. If you go to DoctorWhoNews.net, there's a link to the eBay site, and that closes on the 14th of March. I'm just going to have a look, see what it's
I would have no chance.
£5.50, but no, it doesn't
it's
actually say
the 14th
say
of March.
It doesn't actually say how much it's going for. That's weird. There's a load of... Sorry, that's the auction itself. There's a load of things at the auction. But it doesn't actually say that. But yeah, but click on the link. There might be a further things to look at. I haven't actually got time to look at the moment. Doctor Who Magazine, episode 562, available from whoone.co.uk internationally.
Did you say episode?
I beg your pardon?
Did you just say episode
I might
number?
Have done, because I say episode...
You said the issue number.
Yeah, issue 562. I might have said episode. I do apologise, Robert.
Episode.
Be quiet. Yes, it's got Dream Worlds, a very beautiful graphic
Thanks.
Of some Daleks on the cover. And it's very, very striking. One of the more striking Doctor Who magazine covers. Doctor Who Chronicles 1965. The Doctor Who Chronicles is a new series of bookazines from the makers of Doctor Who magazine. And it's... its cover has...
Yeah.
I remember these being quite expensive, these, actually. But the cover has William Hartnell on it and a graphic for 1965.
Yeah, they are quite pricey, though.
That's really it for Doctor Who news, I'm afraid. Sorry, not a lot going on at the moment.
At least nobody's dying.
Well, that's good. Mm. But now you said that, you can guarantee that next week there'll be loads.
Yeah, okay.
Hi, this is Fraser Hines, and you're listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
The Empty Child by Stephen Moffat. There was another TV show about a time traveller, Goodnight Sweetheart. The time traveller had a wife who became a singer in World War II.
Yeah, I quite like that series.
The scene at the beginning of this episode was similar to scenes in that. Mm. This story introduces us to Captain Jack Harkness, in the days when he fancied women. He has changed over the centuries.
He still had a bit of a thing with a bloke.
No, in her first episode, Rose said, "No A-levels, no job, but I'll tell you what I have got. School gymnastics team. I got the bronze." This was useful when she rescued the Doctor from the Autons.
Absolutely.
It came in handy in this episode when she was struggling with a barrage balloon.
Yeah.
Rose had a nice T-shirt. I'm loving these T-shirts.
Spice Girls.
Captain Jack left the compound where the Tula craft was due to be hit by a bomb. He returned with a ship to save the Doctor. This reminds me of Star Wars, where Han Solo returned with his Millennium Falcon to save the day.
Yeah.
I think Jamie, the title character, was only wearing his gas mask when he was killed as a plot requirement. I think the procedure was to shout gas, gas, gas and put on a gas mask if you suspected there was a gas attack. Or a Slitheen. Look at the size of that thing, Doctor. That is nearly only 20 megabytes. Yes, Jamie, it is a big one. Bye for now.
Are you watching Doctor Who again?
I haven't said what we were actually reviewing this week because it has a certain impact on you. Hello, Carl.
Hello.
Doctor Dancer's Empty Child, but the other one
around. I don't like that one.
Yeah, but you were watching them recently. Did you actually watch that one?
Did we watch that one?
I can't remember.
I think we did.
Probably.
Because you said point blank you're never going to watch it.
No, I did. I did watch it, but it just creeps me out. I'm not scared of it anymore.
Which one's this one?
The gas mask one.
Oh, are you my mummy one?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's freaky.
I don't like it. No. It's just creepy.
Did you watch it?
I watched it. Yeah. It's just creepy.
Pulling it onto my arm.
Yeah, but did it really have as much of an effect on you as it did when you were...
No, it was just creepy. I just didn't
like it. Nightmares about it afterwards,
I have nightmares about zombies these days, don't I? I watch a zombie movie and I have a nightmare.
Don't watch them then.
I like them though.
Did you have nightmares about Dr. Darkness's Empty Child?
For days and days on end.
No, I mean, when you originally watched it.
Oh, yeah, no, that horrified me. It traumatised me as a kid.
Did it traumatise you enough to refuse to watch it for 10 years?
No. I'll still watch it. I think I watched it every couple of times after that.
Yeah.
I don't mind it. But it's still, when I first watched it, I was like, what is this?
It's creepy. You shouldn't show children that shit. You shouldn't.
No, that's the whole point of it, isn't it? You've got to get the children scared. But no, we watched it and thoroughly enjoyed it. And
it is a good episode.
She actually stayed awake for it.
She
didn't manage to do for the previous one, which, I forgot what it was. Anyway, she fell asleep. Okay, thank you very much. Oh, by the way, we've got episode 500 coming up soon. I really don't know what we're going to do for it.
500? Jesus Christ. You can have my dog. You can interview my dog.
Yes, you're too far away from the microphone. So just like the old days. Right, thank you.
Bye.
Hi, this is Jessica Martin, and you are listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Is
this happening with the sponsors?
Now, if anybody else has got anything, I'm not going to go down the...
whowhoone.co.uk?
Yeah, I've mentioned that.
whowoone.co.uk?
I'm not going to go down the road of sponsors this week, simply because we're running out of time.
But we just mentioned
and it's
sponsors.
Been a long... I know, shut up. It's been a long episode.
Is it?
Next time, we'll
Oh, my goodness, I completely missed it. Today was Pi Day. Oh dear.
Oh, God.
Next time we'll be talking about Boomtown.
I haven't been on Facebook all day.
And I'm sure
today is Mother's Day in England. So it happy is. Mother's Day, yeah. Debbie.
Thank
yes,
you.
Happy Debbie's Day, Mother. Sorry.
No.
What's the saying? Boomtown next week. Next time. I never guarantee it's next week. It's supposed to be next week, but you never know. Ben won't be on because there's football. Oh, he might be on if the the FA Cup game that Man United are playing finishes before 7 p.m. So wait and see on that one. And it should be doable for you lot because it's only a one-part story before. And I'm not even going to admit it now, before my favourite two-parter of Series 1. So,
you're just a ripper, isn't it?
Yeah. So until
Do we have a quiz this week?
Thank goodness.
Well, clearly not, as I'm winding the show
Please?
Up.
No.
Just a quick one.
No, it's not enough time, Robert. It's not enough time, unfortunately. If it was a one-parter and there's plenty of time and I'm in the mood for it, maybe so. Anyway, thank you for listening, taking part and supporting the show. Please continue to do so. Until next time, goodbye.
Bye. Goodbye, Fancy Pants.
Bye.
Okay, bye.
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production sponsored by whoone.co.uk and lavazzi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.